What's up, folks? Welcome to Nino's Corner.tv. I'm joined with Mike King, and this will make Flufftube. We are talking about the divine selfie. Mike King is going to show evidence of the Shroud of Turin and his, I guess, research behind it to show that it is legitimate, right, Mike? Is that what we're going to be talking about today?
I am convinced it is the legitimate, authentic burial cloth of Jesus Christ. And I'm not speaking from a religious sense, but just the data, the facts, the forensics.
Beautiful. And this is going to be a good one, folks, because I actually did a podcast with L.A. Marzulli a while back about this, and it was very convincing. Very, very convincing. And I'm a true believer. And that was one of the reasons that solidified my baptism, to be quite honest with you, when I went and got baptized, because I was like, I don't need any more proof than this, and this is all I need. And I've always been a believer my entire life, but you have your doubts here and there, and this really sealed the deal for me. So this is going to be interesting. I can't wait to get into this. But first, folks, get your healthy fat. You don't want to be fat. It turns out the key to losing weight and keeping it off is not in the carbs or fat or even in probiotic-rich foods. No, the end game of having a healthy weight as well as more energy and a long, healthy life comes down to a specific switch you can flip in your body to flush out unnecessary calories. Dr. Stephen Gundry is calling it the caloric bypass. And by activating this specific process in your body, he has seen thousands, yes, thousands of people dramatically improve their health, even at age 50 and beyond. This includes losing weight, getting tons more energy, and returning to the good health they had in their youth once they simply address this one key to better health. Not only that, this is actually associated with improved digestion, strong feeling joints and muscles, smoother skin, and healthier lives, meaning it could be the key to a happy life. Dr. Stephen Gundry has lost 70 pounds himself using his research and has kept the weight off for over 20 years and counting. His digestive issues are now gone, his health is fantastic, and he feels younger and healthier today than he did in his 40s. His video has been watched by over 20 million people to date. And you can watch and learn more about it at thehealthyfat.com/Nino, thehealthyfat.com/Nino. Get over there, folks. And it all starts in the gut. It really does. And that's why I also do fasting. So I got to tell you, folks, I don't peddle anything I don't believe in. Thanks, Mike, for waiting for that. All right, let's get into this. The Shroud of Turin. Do you want me to bring up some slides or?
Yeah, we'll go blow through these slides. I've got
Okay.
things in a nice chronological format. That's what I do. I take a vast subject and I simplify it.
It's pretty incredible, man.
Yeah.
I mean, so are we really, you believe, and I believe it, we are looking at the face of Jesus Christ right here.
I absolutely believe that. And like I said, I'm putting aside religion, faith. I was raised Catholic and all that. I'm just looking at forensics combined with logic. So that's the new book. It's available on Amazon. My author page is Mike King or Mike S. King. The Divine Selfie. It's available in all countries, paperback or Kindle. A crash course on the Jesus Shroud of Turin. Now, what you're seeing there on the cover, that image, that's not what you see if you go to Turin and see the shroud on display. What you see at Turin looks almost like a sponge painting. You really can't discern the image of a man. You know it's a man, but you don't see
Right, it's
intricate.
just the bloodish kind of faint outline a little bit.
Well, you would think maybe it's paint, but it's not. But it looks like kind of a impressionistic sponge paint. Only when you take a picture and you go to develop the negative, you get that. And
So
that
that's the
therein
only
lies the
way to
mystery.
develop the negative. That is so you have to take the picture. You can't see, and they didn't have this technology back in a
No.
thousand years ago, so they would never have
Right.
known. So in other words,
Photography is developed in what? The
there's no way to fake
1850s.
that. There is no way to fake that. Correct, Mike?
Correct. That's what I
Because they
mean by
didn't have that
forensics.
technology back then.
Right. I mean, how can an artist make like what looks like a sponge painting, anticipating, well, 2,000 years from now when they invent cameras, they'll appreciate what I did? No. This is not th this this is photographic technology you're looking at, and I'll get into that in my presentation. But that is not what you see on the shroud. You only see that because you know how it was in the old days. You take before iPhone, you take a picture and then you take your little film, you drop it off at CVS, they develop it. The film itself is just a negative, okay? But I'll cover all of that. But that's the book, and yeah. And that's the cover, The Divine Selfie. Okay, the next panel here. Are you able to make it so you can see the whole page on one screen or no?
This is about the best I can do.
Okay. Well, what you see up top, that's the rectangular image. It's about 14 feet. Well, then you see less of it. I was hoping to see more of it, but that's okay. But 14 feet by 3 feet, rectangular. So the body would lay on the shroud, and then it would be folded over the top. So now when you take the front image and the back image, that's what you see below, side by side.
So this top rectangle up here, that is what?
That is the full shroud, right.
The full shroud, okay.
Right,
okay.
And on those rare occasions when they put it on display, that's what you would see.
And this is the front and back of it, correct?
Right, just put side by side so you could see it. So that's what I mean. Sure, you could see it's an image of a man, but it's very vague.
So it was folded. It was folded like this, correct? So it was like that.
Yeah, you're laying on it, and then the other half would be folded
right.
over.
Wow. Okay? Okay.
So that's why it's like head to head when you spread it out like that. So that's what I mean. You don't see a clear image. It almost looks like an amateurish sponge painting, right?
So this shows he's covered in blood, obviously. He would have been soaked in blood because it's his entire body that's full of blood. I mean, the imprint of is of his entire body.
Well, the imprint is like a reddish color, but that's not the blood. But there is blood all over the shroud, and we're going to get into that. But that is what you physically see. And if you stand close to it, you don't see it so clearly. As you walk back from it, you see it more and more clearly, which is kind of weird. Okay, so if we go to the next panel. Okay, now the burial shroud is mentioned in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Here's in John, for example, it says Simon Peter came, went straight to the tomb. He saw the linen cloths lying there, as well as the cloth that had been wrapped around Jesus' head. The cloth was still lying in its place, separate from the linen. Two cloths, one around the head, and then the shroud. And that's what they found according to the Gospels when they went into the tomb. So I just want to give a little chronological context there.
Okay.
When we get into the shroud. Jesus in secular history, we're talking Jesus, the man, the personage. We'll keep religion off to the side here and faith off to the side. Jesus, the man, absolutely existed. And this was recorded in secular Roman history by a couple of prominent Roman historians who weren't exact contemporaries. They're writing like 30, 40 years after the fact. One is Josephus. He's a Jewish historian, Roman Jewish. The other is Tacitus, who was an official. He was a senator and was an official historian of the Roman Empire. And they both write about Jesus crucified under the governor of Judea, Pontius Pilate, and then there emerged the movement followers. They don't get into any of the gospel stuff, but they do record his existence and crucifixion. So, of course, he existed as a man.
Who are these?
We're going to build a legend. You got to have somebody there. You can't just invent a personage, you know? So.
Okay, so these are the emperors right here.
That's Josephus, and Tacitus. They were big in the day, serious scholars, and they record the existence and crucifixion of Jesus. And now we also know from history, not just the Gospels, but we know from actual history that the province of Judea was always a big headache for the Romans. It was a rebellious province. Okay. You know, you're dealing with, I guess you could call it the Israel lobby of the day. Always pressure, always trouble.
Kind of like today.
Exactly, yeah. And it's a fact that the Romans always sought to pacify that province, you know,
So they never wanted to really rile the Jews. They had to keep them at peace. They had to keep them at bay.
Precisely, precisely. They didn't want to cause no trouble. So they would say, "Hey, we can't have Caesar on our coins because that's sacrilegious." So they'd make a special coin for them. They're always trying to pacify them because and they had a violent element to it. Finally, in the year 60 something, the Romans just went in and they had enough. They sacked the place. And they scattered the Jews of Jerusalem. But so that's history. That's known history that they had problems with Judea. So that kind of matches up with the New Testament account of the Pharisees going to the governor and saying, "We want this guy dead." Okay? And we have the story in the Gospels how, you know, Jesus had a really badass side to him as well. It wasn't just about love and forgiveness. He went into the temple with a whip.
He took the fight to the Pharisees.
And to their face, "You're hypocrites, you're sons of the devil." So,
wow.
Okay, it's right there in the Old Testament. Sons of hell, hypocrites. So one could easily envision now, just from the history, you could kind of confirm what's in the gospel, that they went to the Roman governor to have him rubbed out and they pressured him because the Romans don't care about your local culture and religious practices. All they were concerned with is, you know, pay your taxes and obey the law. They would have no reason to crucify Jesus Christ other than intense pressure from the Pharisees.
To please the Jewish sector,
right.
Correct? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, those are scenes from Mel Gibson's movie, 2004. And when we cover the Shroud, we're going to see it's no exaggeration. They really took it to him hard. They flogged him mercilessly. They got him on the front. They got him on the back. They got him on the inside of the thighs. They got him on the face. The crown with thorns and the crucifixion. I mean, it was brutal. You wonder how he even made it to the cross still alive.
Okay? I think Jim Caviezel played the best Jesus I've seen.
Yeah, he sure did, and I like the way they dug up the old language of Aramaic, and he spoke in it. It kind of really brought it to life, you know.
Yeah.
So incredible. That's how it went down.
I mean, that was massive torture there. So how long did they torture him for?
Well, quite a while. They really whipped him hard, and then he had to carry the cross. Which was very heavy, and he's falling down on his face. So, you know, I don't know how long it lasted, but it must have been excruciating. I can't imagine what it must feel like to have a crown of thorns, like, in your head, you know, just the throbbing pain. Now, okay, the shroud that's described in the New Testament. We're going to follow the historical journey of the shroud. It's not until that's a typo there. It's not 1530. It's 1350. The numbers are switched around. 1350s. Geoffroy de Charny. He's a French Knight Templar. He brought it to France from a crusade. It's not exactly clear the circumstances of how he came into possession. Whether it was to protect it, because, you know, already at that time there's you're beginning to have pressure from Turks and so on. Maybe it wasn't so safe in the East, or maybe they looted it. I don't know. But it says here
he brought it in 1530. Pope Clement was skeptical, declaring it a relic.
Right.
Taking a pass on
that's a typo. That's a typo. The numbers switched around. It's 1350.
Okay, but 1350?
Right.
All right, but taking a pass on its authenticity. But they had no way of testing it back then.
Well, of course not. They just see an image. This is what. So the official position was: we don't want to bet all our chips on this. This could be a fraud. This could be a painting. It does kind of look like a painting,
right?
And they didn't have the sophistication to search for trace amounts of dye or paint or anything like that,
or DNA,
or blood. Right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Not any of that. They just had the oral tradition passed on generation to generation to generation. This is the burial cloth of Christ. And obviously it was very revered and venerated item. So a lot of people believe very strongly that it was. But the church's official position then and even today has kind of been hands off. It's a relic. We're not going to take an official position
well,
on it.
But I mean, what does the Catholic Church say, though?
That's their position. They
don't want to.
They consider it a holy artifact, but they.
But wait, what about the Lady of Guadalupe? I mean, the images of Mary. They say those are real, correct?
Yeah, they do.
Why wouldn't they say this is real? That's what I'm confused about.
Perhaps because they don't have contemporary witnesses. I don't know. They've never definitively said. I mean, like the Pope, that this is the burial cloth of Christ.
Okay, fair enough.
So that's just their position on it. Now, a couple centuries later, 1532, the church where it's being held is virtually destroyed by fire, a horrible fire, and it damaged the shroud. And keep in mind, you know, Satanists go back through the centuries. Okay, so you have Satanists and Christians, they run concurrent with each other. So,
Cain and Abel, right?
I don't know how the fire started, but it was almost completely destroyed.
Okay, so they were trying to deliberately get rid of the shroud, you think?
Well, that's speculation. I would think so. Because later on, we're going to see some of the hostility towards the shroud from these people. So just suffice to say, fire nearly destroyed the shroud. And that's why you have those lines and those blotches.
And where was this church located?
In France.
France, okay.
Okay. A couple hundred years later, in the 1500s, the shroud is moved to Turin's Cathedral of St. John the Baptist. And that's how it came to take the name, the Shroud of Turin. 1898, the photos of Segundo Pio. Now, photography is only like, 30, 40 years old at this point. So in 1898, the shroud is still owned by the House of Savoy. This was like the royal family that governed like France and Northern Italy. And they allowed the first photograph of the shroud to be taken in 1898. That's Segundo Pio. He's a lawyer and an amateur photographer. Takes his picture. And they didn't even have film back then. You would have the image, the negative image, captured by a glass plate. And then you go in a dark room and you develop it and you get your black and white photo. So he's taking a picture of the shroud and he's expecting to see a negative. But instead, he gets a positive defined image. That's the one on the right. That's a museum exhibit there. That's Pia's camera, and that's the image he took. And he darn near shit himself in the dark room. He says, I was so startled, I almost dropped the glass plate. I couldn't believe what I'm seeing. How do you go from this vague, impressionistic image to something so highly defined? It's actually three-dimensional. You can see. I mean, everything, the details.
If he wasn't a believer, I bet you he was a believer right then and there.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And here's a quote from Segundo Pio. Closed in my dark room, all intent on my work, I experienced a very strong emotion during the development. I saw for the first time the Holy Face appear on a plate with such clarity that I was dumbfounded by it. No human being could have painted this negative that lies hidden in the stains. It was not painted and not made by human hands.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow. So
look at that image. It's a perfect black-white image on a linen cloth. It's a photograph. That's why I call it the divine self.
You know, he had a very pronounced Jesus, almost, you know, a very pronounced bone structure. You know, if you look at his nose, his cheekbones, forehead, eyebrows, almost like kind of like an Eastern European type bone structure, right? Do you agree with that? I mean.
Yeah. And the image itself is almost like 3D, so you could really almost discern his face. And it's interesting, all of the early artworks from the Eastern Roman Empire after they adopted Christianity, they kind of look like that. You know, where did they get this image of the man with the shoulder-length hair and the beard and the thin face? So they were basing it off of the shroud.
Incredible, man.
And this is what I'm talking about back in the day. I mean, some of the younger folks don't even know about this stuff, right? But you took your picture with your Kodak camera, you opened up, you had the little roll of negative film like that. That it's, I guess, some kind of plastic, right? and you capture a negative. So you see that center image, there's the negative of a little girl. You take the picture of a little girl, you get that. You don't see her features. You just see black, white. You can't make out anything. But then when you develop the negative into a positive, there you go. Perfect black and white photo of that little
girl.
Right.
Look at his beard is white.
Now you look at the shroud and look at that girl's negative. That's a negative on the shroud.
Wow.
That's incredible. So when Segundo Pio is developing the negative, a negative of a negative is a positive. So you go from that image where you don't really see anything other than just a general outline of the face of a man to this one, which is almost a perfect black and white photo. And that's on a linen. So this is, the Italian press published it in the newspapers. It was a big story back in 1898, but you had your naysayers. They said, this guy pulled a fast one. He's scamming.
Right.
He didn't make no money on it or anything like that. And he swore up and down, no, this is true. And he had to live with that kind of stigma all those years. But in 1931, they allowed the shroud to be photographed again. And by that time, the photography is even more advanced. And Giuseppe Henri took the photos in 1931. Got the same exact results as Segundo Pia. And he had an event, a press conference type thing. And he invited Segundo Pia, who by this time was a very old man. And so he was vindicated. He got the same exact result.
I mean, there's
the full
look
body.
Look at the features. I mean, beautiful, man.
In the full body shot, you see you see the fingers. You see the wounds. It even has elements almost like when you look up really close of an X-ray. They can see the damage done internally. Just incredible detail. It's like a CAT scan. So
it's absolutely incredible. Folks, let me just hit one more commercial here. Folks, if you're like me and you're getting to that age where your body just hurts all the time, then listen up. Don't reach for another painkiller until you learn about this little-known turmeric hack for pain and inflammation. You've probably already heard about turmeric being used to fight inflammation and joint pain, but here's the thing. Not all turmeric is created equal. Regular turmeric powders in your pantry might help a little, but a leading pain doctor from Connecticut discovered a specific turmeric extract that is 200 times more powerful than what you'd find in standard turmeric. And what he has shared, this turmeric hack, with his patients, the results are shocking. This turmeric extract attacks pain at the source, turning it off like a light switch so that pain not only goes away but stays away. Dr. Josh, the brain behind it all, has spent over 20 years helping hundreds of thousands of Americans finally break free from constant aches and stiffness. And his turmeric hack has been the backbone of their success. Say goodbye to expensive surgeries, pain injections, or ineffective over-the-counter medications. And say hello to the pain-free living. This is incredible stuff. Once I started taking it regularly, I really noticed a difference. But again, you can't just take any old turmeric. So if you want to learn more about Dr. Josh, his turmeric hack, and the exact method for how to use it, and with your daily routine, just go to goldenrevive.com/Nino. Yes, folks, I take this as well. And this stuff is amazing. I've been taking turmeric all my life since boxing, but I'm really on it now because the aches and pains from boxing occur later in life. And I can say that I'm a lot more pain-free now than ever before. All right, Mike, what is that one to the very far right?
Okay, well, we got three images there. One's the actual shroud. The other one is the photographic image taken by Giuseppe Henri. And this one here is through a mechanism that enables you to see it kind of in 3D, almost like a scan. It has three-dimensional properties.
Kind of like almost like an MRI type of...
Yeah, exactly. Okay? So you can see everything. And it is anatomically perfect. Nobody could paint or sketch like that until Leonardo da Vinci came along, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so that is the three-dimensional
version
image of Jesus Christ right there. How do we know how tall he was? Did they ever, wasn't he like 6'1 or 6'2, something like that?
I saw just under 6 foot, like 5'11.
Just under, okay.
Yeah, and for that day, it was, tall fella.
Yeah.
You know? All right. So now, so there we stand. That's the first forensic proof of it. These photographs, 1898, 1931. Then in 1976, scientists, they were physicists, John P. Jackson and Eric Jumper, they began assembling a team of 30 other experts from all different fields. And finally, in 1978, they were given access to the shroud by the House of Savoy allowed it. So it's like the House of Savoy still owned it. The Catholic Church kind of managed it. And they're very protective, obviously. But it wasn't until 78 they let these crack forensic scientists have a look at it. These guys were all professionals, top tier scientists from various fields. They had a blood expert, like a radiology expert, a photography expert, experts on fabrics. They had 4 days to examine the shroud, 96 hours. They went 96 hours straight. They slept in shifts, so they could maximize the work to do on the shroud. And they took samples of it with adhesive tape, put everything under the microscope.
Weren't they only able to take samples of it from the edges of the linen, though?
The edges.
The edges of the shroud. So they weren't really, because and that they weren't really able to take. Well, I mean, were they able to take blood samples? I don't know.
Oh yeah. The Sturp team. I'm going to go over what they got, and it was astounding. But these guys were mostly, being scientists, they're either agnostic or atheist, most of them, and they actually surveyed them before the project, and it was like 90% of them were either atheist or agnostic. There was a couple Jewish guys. There was only two people who said that they believed the shroud was authentic. Okay, so this was not any kind of rigged thing.
So they were there to debunk it, essentially.
Essentially, they were there just to do their job, but they all believed going in that they would find the trick, explain it, and that would be the end of it. That was their cognitive bias going in. It was really against the shroud being authentic. But what they found really surprised them. And here's a summary of the key points. Number one, there's absolutely no paint, no oil, no dye, no scorch marks on the shroud. The source of the image only affects the tippy top microns of the shroud. They don't know how it got on there, but it ain't no artwork.
So it is authentic.
Yes, that's what they concluded.
So it was what they're saying there is it was draped over a man. They're not going to say it's Jesus, but they're saying that it was draped over a human being and that it is authentic so far.
Yes. There was nothing was drawn by strokes or any dotted art technique, so they ruled out artistry. The human blood stains all over the shroud, they're real blood. It's type AB positive.
Is that really a rare type? I thought the Rh negative.
Only 3% of people have it. So it's rare.
Really?
It's known as the universal recipient, which is.
I thought O negative was.
I think O negative might be the universal donor.
Donor, you're right. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's AB. The pattern of the blood stains is consistent with those of a man who's crowned with thorns and flogged. Two men carried out the whipping, and they could even determine one was taller than the other by the angle of the whip marks.
Wow.
Okay. Some of the blood on the cloth came out of a living man while he's being whipped, nailed to the cross, etc. Some of the other blood comes from a dead man, which oozed out after he had died. So they could tell. It's got different properties. Also, the blood reveals traces of a hormone called bilirubin, which is only released if a man is under extreme torment and torture. So the man in that shroud was absolutely terrorized and brutalized. And the blood, the hormones in the blood prove that. The blood stained the fabric first, and then the image came. Because where there's blood, you don't see the outline of an image, because the image didn't take on blood. It only took on the cloth. So first you had the blood. The selfie's taken later, okay? And then finally, there's an image of a spear wound right in the side. And in the Gospels, it says, before they took him off the cross, the Romans wanted to make sure he was dead. They stabbed him in the side with a spear. And you see that not only the blood, under UV light, you see the plasma, which you don't see visibly to the eye. So that's what they found. These are the forensics.
So let me ask you this. Could just anybody who's been crucified and tortured leave this imprint on the Shroud of Turin?
Well...
Or did it have to have some kind of other properties to it, like radioactive?
It would have to be a photographic process, which simply did not, obviously, did not exist back then.
Right.
And there's nobody else that we have ever heard of who was...
the fact that it, I know that it's lasted this long is unbelievable, yeah. But what's the supernatural properties to it?
There's no supernatural properties to the blood.
I mean, the fact that it makes an imprint of him, that it's lasted this long.
It's the photographic image, which could only be made by a light so intense. I think they calculated out gazillions of watts.
Okay, so that proves that some kind of a light emanated out of his body, correct?
Yeah, only a light, an intense light, not like a flashbulb.
Important than the blood is that there was a light that emanated out of his body. Yeah. That's more important than the blood that was able to cause that negative on the film.
Yeah.
Wow.
There has to be an intense light of supernatural origin, because we don't know any light that could possibly be that bright.
Wow.
And when they calculate the amount of watts that it would take, it is also associated with heat. It doesn't make sense because the heat would have disintegrated the cloth in an instant. So it's like an intense light, but without the heat, a UV light, maybe. That's what they speculate. So, yeah, there had to be an intense, unimaginable light that caused this image on the shroud. And again, this is what the scientists say, and we got to trust the science. But in this case, this is real science. It's forensic science. They got the receipts on this, and nobody can dispute this. Nobody challenges this. It is what it is. Blood type, bilirubin hormones in the blood, a light imprint on the cloth. And in the final statement of the STIRP team, one of the leaders of the STIRP project, Dr. John Heller, had the whole statement in my book that they issued. But he says, we can conclude for now that the shroud image is that of a real human form of a scourged, crucified man. It is not the product of an artist. And that other gentleman you see there, he was the blood specialist at the STIRP team. He's another Jewish guy who came to believe in it. And he's the one who detected the bilirubin in the blood.
This man right here.
Alvin Adler. Yeah. And in this plate, you're looking at a mannequin that was created based off the image of the shroud, which allows you to see the wounds. You look how hard they took it to him, the whip marks. And you see the spear on the side, the nails on the feet. And again, the whip marks, the blood that's coming from the whipping and the nails, they were able to determine it came from a live man, still living. But something like the jab on the side oozed out from a dead man.
Right. So the marks that we see on him, that was a whip that had some kind of like hooks on it, correct? That would take chunks out.
Yeah, they would put like little pieces of metal or stone on the end. So it's really digging into your flesh. And they got them all over. In the inside of the thighs, the hamstrings, even some shots on the neck. And really, really brutalized them again. And they could determine it's two men and one taller than the other.
How? I mean... that's crazy. I guess this was one man on one side, the other man was on the other.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They just don't have. Okay,
I mean, Mel Gibson's movie, it pretty much nails it.
Wow.
If you look at the shroud. Now, 1988. Oh, no. Scientists come along, they do a carbon dating test, and they determine that the shroud.
You can't depend on carbon dating. It originated
between 1260 and 1390. All over the news, the shroud has been debunked. It's not authentic. Okay. And you know what they did? They leaked out the results of their study to the media before they told the Catholic Church. So it was all over the press. Church is caught flat-footed. So then later on, the Catholic Church goes along with it. And they announced, we still don't know how the image got on the shroud, but it is not the burial cloth of Jesus, because they got to trust the science. And these guys were so
proud. In other words, this was a complete demonic assault, the way I see it.
I'm gonna demonstrate that. Yeah, I'm gonna show that in the upcoming panels. But at the time, nobody questioned it, because they said, we took three different samples, sent it out to three different laboratories, and we all got the same result. And you
carbon
see
dating is, isn't carbon dating very flawed in the first place?
Well, first of all, it's if everything is perfect, okay, it will yield an accurate result. The problem is things are easily contaminated.
Right.
But that wasn't the case here, and I'll get into what they did. But notice on the blackboard, he writes 1260 to 1390, and he puts an exclamation point in it. That kind of shows you his mindset. He's so excited. He's so proud of himself, exclamation point.
Debunking Jesus.
Shown to be a fake. The fake news, they ran wild with this. New York Times, front page, bottom fold. Church says the Shroud of Turin is not authentic. And then you see all these headlines. Fake accompli, the Turin Shroud, the work of a master forger. And then the Catholic Church went along with it.
Of course they did.
At this time, and I remember when my mother saw this, it was on the news. She was all sad and disappointed. I said, well, that's all right. You know, it's still a miracle how it got on the cloth, right? I mean, it was demoralizing. It was a big black pill, this event right here.
Right.
So,
you know what? I can vaguely remember this myself. I was in Catholic school at the time, and I remember this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were talking about it. I remember it was a big blow to especially Catholics.
Yeah, they didn't see it coming. And the way the media hyped it back then, said, yeah, this is the new science, carbon dating. It's three different labs. And then when the church, I don't know if they turned cowardly or if they were in on it, they went along with it. But they did trick the church. In a sense, they put them in a corner because they leaked it to the press before they went to the church. So now if the church tried to like ask questions, it would look like they're in denial.
Right, 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 right. They got ahead of them.
Yeah, that's a dick move right there.
Yeah, it is.
Now, in the year 2000, a couple of Shroud enthusiasts, amateurs, Joe Marino and Susan Benford, but particularly Susan Benford, she's a nurse. She's looking at the pictures that were provided from this so-called carbon dating study, and she's matching that up to other pictures of the original Shroud, and she thinks it's not the same weave pattern. Because remember when we talked about that fire?
The fire, yeah.
Well, they had some nuns who were some really badass seamstresses, and they apparently did some repair work, which you can't even tell. But she was able to, she detected, she says there's a slight difference. She published a paper. Now, the problem is these people, you know, they're nobody. I mean, they're nobody, but they're not scientists.
Right.
They're an audience. They're going to say, oh, you're just fanatics. But one of the STIRP team members, his name was Barry Schwartz. I'm going to talk about him more later on. And he was very passionate about the Shroud, kind of dedicated his life to it, changed his life. Jewish, by the way, and he was the number one fan of the Shroud. But Barry Schwartz, he published it on his website, her paper. And now the fellow you see on the right, that's Ray Rogers. He's another one of the STIRP team leaders. He was actually one of the organizers. He took Barry Schwartz to task over this. He says, Barry, why are you publishing this? These people aren't scientists. You know, they got to let it go. They just can't deal with the reality. It's not 2000, blah, blah. He says, I'll take a look at it, because he still had samples from 1978. So he took the samples from out of his safe or whatever, and then he compared it to the images that were the photographic images that were provided by the debunk of 1988. He says, holy shit, it's not the same. They don't match up. This might have come from the repair job.
Mm.
So now it's back in play.
Wow.
Okay. But the struggle now, the challenge was you got to get at the data from 1988. They didn't want to release it. The British Museum had it. This went on for years. We go to the next panel. It took a FOIA request. They have FOIA in Britain too, Freedom of Information Act. A court order finally got them to release their data. And what happened once it was, and this is not till 2019, okay, recent. Once it's released, you know what they found? Here's what they did. This is the shroud, right? They keyed in right on where the repair work was done, wherever that is. Took one sample, cut it into three, sent it out to three different laboratories, and say, oh, we got the same result at every lab. Made you think it was like three corroborating institutions.
In other words, they didn't take it from different parts of the shroud. They took it from one piece, cut it.
Right, because a real scientific method, a true scientific protocol, you would go along the perimeter, get like four or five from...
Especially one in the center. You'd have to get one in the center.
Yeah, they could, but they knew what they were looking for. That is why it took a Freedom of Information Act. Let me tell you, when you do science, you don't hide your shit. You make a discovery, right. You open it up to the world. Have at it. Peer review. They had to fight tooth and nail all these years to finally see what they did. They pulled the trick.
Wow. Wow.
And now, in more recent times, there's a new procedure. It's called spectrometry, whereby you can date items. And the gentleman you see in the middle, that's an Italian physicist, took the original samples. He says it's 2,000 years old. Nobody can dispute it.
So it is 2,000 years
old. It is 2,000. It's been
dated. So it adds up perfectly with the time period. Wow. Exactly. Right. Man,
he nailed it within a 30-year period. That's Dr. Giulio Fanti, and other scientists have confirmed it through this new procedure, spectrometric analysis. And then finally, Joe Marino of the team of Benford and Marino, he authored a book on the 1988 carbon-14 dating. And it basically exposes the cover-up.
Wow, and that it was deliberate.
It was, of course it was deliberate. That's why they fought it tooth and nail. He had to go to the courts because it's part of the known history.
I mean, if you just look at this guy, if you just look at this picture here with this guy right here, he just looks, I mean, they just
look. He looks like a devil. Yeah.
They look like they are possessed, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah, for sure.
But Marino makes the case. This wasn't just sloppy science. It wasn't just people who let their biases get control of them. No, because it's part of the known history of the shroud that you had this fire and you had this repair work. They went right for that. One sample from the repair job, cut in three to make you think it was three samples. Total freaking fraud. They killed the shroud. But now it's back. However, what's interesting is I still recall the hype of the so-called debunking in 1988. But, you know, the debunking of the debunking doesn't get any publicity today. So a lot of people now are still under the impression that it was dated to only the medieval times. But here's one headline from the Express of London. It did seep into the mainstream media a little bit. Jesus Christ bombshell. The Shroud of Turris hoax claims are ruled out. But is it the face of God? And then it goes on to describe.
So they're saying that it is real, but is it the face of Jesus Christ?
They're saying it's too.
So now they got to try to, like, they got to still keep trying to debunk this thing.
Yeah. Like there was another guy who got crucified, crowned with thorns, stabbed in the side.
Right, yeah, sure.
Right. Yeah. But it's back in, it's definitely back in play now. So now.
As long as they can sow doubt, as long as they can create and sow doubt.
Yeah. Other proofs of the age and origin. They tested the pollen. Pollen gets into everything. I mean, if you ever known somebody who has bad allergies to pollen, you see how they suffer during pollen season. Pollen's everywhere.
Right.
But there's so many infinite amount of plant species around the world that they are able to trace.
But how could they prove this either? Because this Shroud of Turris traveled to so many distant lands. I mean, well, it's going to have different.
The pollen that they find in the Shroud of Turin matches the oral history of the journey. They got pollen that's unique to Palestine, pollen that's unique to Turkey, where they kept it in Constantinople, and then to Europe. But there is pollen in there from Judea. Okay.
In there from Judea.
From plants that are indigenous only to modern day Palestine.
Wow.
Okay, physicists John Jackson and Eric Jumper. Again, these are original STIRP team members. They're older now, but recently, not too long ago, maybe 10 years ago, they made the discovery of Roman coins on the eyelids. So they could tell from the eyelids of the shroud that there were two coins, and then they got they enlisted the help of numismatic experts, coin collecting experts, and they nailed it. It's a Roman coin from that era.
Wow! So there was
Roman coins on the eyelids to keep the eyelids shut. Yeah.
And wow! And they proved that it was Roman coins on the eyelids. So now that it shows even further proof.
Right. Right. In addition to the spectrometric analysis. More proof. Again, this is forensic science, not fake science. This is true science, which we have to respect and we should respect. Limestone match on the shroud, again, indigenous to Judea. They found on the shroud, the face and the knees and the nose had trace remnants of limestone. What do the Gospels tell us? He's carrying a heavy cross. He's been whipped and beaten. He can't do it no more. He falls down three times, falls on his face. Okay? The limestone on the shroud supports this. And it's limestone from Judea.
Sorry, I was muted. He fell upon limestone?
Right, so he fell down. The limestone is unique to Judea, and the shroud has got a limestone on the nose and the knees.
Wow.
And the face. Okay.
So he was on a limestone path then? Like a cobblestone, limestone type of...
Probably maybe some type of dirt trail carrying the cross to Golgotha.
To his own death.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Now, there's another cloth. Remember, we read that passage from Book of John earlier. They talked about the cloth around his head. That's called the sudarium. I mean, his face is so brutalized, just out of, like, respect, they would have covered it with this cloth, a sudarium, and take him to the tomb and then remove it there. This cloth, again, was passed down through the centuries as the facial cloth that was put around the bloody Jesus. It had ended up in Spain, in the Oviedo, Spain, and it's now known as the Sudarium of Oviedo. They keep it.
Yes, I've heard of this.
Right. Now, it's covered in blood, just like the shroud, but no image, because it would have been removed prior to him being placed on the slab and then covered. It was put to the side. But it's covered in blood. This blood has also been tested. AB positive, perfect match of the blood on the shroud. You know what the odds are? Because only 3% of people have this blood type.
Right, right.
So you go 3% times 3%. Wow. It also has pollen, Palestinian pollen.
Wow.
So further, this supports it. Further somehow, proof. The years these two artifacts got separated, the shroud ends up in Turin. And this ends up in Spain. Okay, so they couldn't kill it with their fake science, right?
Right.
In 1997, there's a fire, horrific fire, just as bad as the Notre Dame fire a few years ago that Macron set. Takes place at the Cathedral of St. John, where the shroud is stored. And it was bad. The people were lining the streets. They were crying. They thought it's over. I mean, this thing will melt because it's kept like in a metal box inside of bulletproof glass. But a hero rose to save the day. Firefighter Mario Trematori. Fire's raging all around him. He's got his sledgehammer. It took him 15 minutes to bust through that bulletproof glass to get to this container. And he's just covered with he's bloodied, he's tired. He said the Holy Spirit gave me the strength. And when you see what he broke through, it must have took some strength and stamina to do that. But he came out, he rescued the shroud in 1997. And he was indeed named as a national hero of Italy after this event. But now about this fire, you start digging a little bit into it. And it's not widely publicized. You have to, but I was suspicious about it. And lo and behold, look what we come to learn. There was an event at a building that's adjoining to the cathedral. You have the cathedral, and then it's connected to like another building. It was a, they were having an event in Turin to honor Kofi Annan, Secretary General of the United Nations. And you know what they're all about. Godless, anti-God, Satanist United Nations.
Right.
They were having pre-dinner drinks at this location, which is adjacent and connected to the cathedral where the shroud is. Kofi Annan.
So they were drinking as this fire was raging?
As it started. They finished their event. But the investigation later revealed that the fire was actually already started on a small scale while they were having the event.
Wow.
There shouldn't be. They're so protective. It's just so weird that they're so close to this. Andreotti is there. He's a globalist. He was president or prime minister of Italy. And they're there. And the fire starts and then they leave. But, you know, that's what the investigation found. The fire started while the event was going on. But there's no connection. You know, can't be conspiracy theorists, right? Well, Vittorio Massari thinks otherwise. He is the official historiographer of Pope John Paul. And he said, believe me, someone wanted to burn the shroud. I do not exclude an international plot. And I would suspect Masonic circles.
Mm.
Of course, they wanted to burn it. And the same with the fire in the 1500s. It also turns out that Turin is a hub of Satanism. Here's a New York Times article from 1986. Does Satan lurk in Turin? LA Times, 1990. Turin is getting a devil of a time. The city has a reputation as a haven for Satan and his disciples. The Catholic Church has six exorcists on duty. So you've got the shroud in Turin. It would stand to reason that the Satanists would kind of establish a stronghold in the same area just because they hate it. And
right.
For years, the Turin Fire Department has had to deal with threats to destroy the cathedral. This time, they really set out.
Unbelievable, man.
Yeah. But I think the globalists tried to torch it. Okay, they can't kill
Turin, this shroud of Turin is an absolute threat.
It is.
That's why they keep trying to debunk it and burn the church. Right. I mean, this is obviously an absolute threat.
They try to debunk it, they suppress it, and then they even set fire to the church. That ain't no coincidence. The freaking UN is there, and the fire starts, and they leave. John Jackson of STIRP and Paolo Di Lazzaro of the Frascati Research Center in Rome, they believe that only an intense UV light could have caused such an image without incinerating the shroud. And they calculated it out to some insane number of watts of energy and power.
Going back to my point earlier, that light emanated out of his body. It was so explosive, so bright.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, you need a good bit of energy just to get light energy, just to get an image on film.
And how could that come from a tortured dead body?
On a linen? Can you imagine? That's not really conducive to imagery.
Right. So
it must have been.
Oh my gosh.
Just incredibly power and incredible. Blinding. Okay. There's a filmmaker, British filmmaker, David Rolfe. He's got $1 million on the table. This is recent. 2022. $1 million, there's a headline from The Guardian, $1 million challenge. If the Turin Shroud is a forgery, show how it was done. And Mr. Rolfe says, they say it was created by a medieval fraudster. And I say, well, if he could do it, you should be able to do it too. And if you can, I have $1 million reward for you. I encourage them to repeat this thing by creating something similar today. Because of all the evidence I have seen, if it is a fake, it is the most ingenious fake in history. $1 million. But that's just chump change. That's just the appetizer. If somebody were to crack this mystery, can you imagine the fame and the fortune,
right,
and the hype and the book deals that the fake news would give him? No. No takers. No takers. They can't.
Wow. That's big right there, because they should be jumping to this. And nobody has even been able to not only just not prove it, debunk it, but they're not even taking his offer. They're just they're staying away from this, huh?
They can't. I mean, where do you even begin? Where do you even begin?
Wow.
Okay. And I gave a shout out in my book to Barry Schwartz, because it was you know, I went to Catholic schools. I knew about the Shroud. I didn't learn any of this stuff about the forensics, which is weird. But you know, he's written articles. He had a website. He's done podcasts, and I sort of stumbled across him in his presentation. So moved me, kind of, to write this book. I actually was intending to reach out to him to do an interview for this book, and hoping that maybe he would even write the foreword for it. I come to learn he died just a few months ago, unfortunately. Okay. But it's ironic that this he's raised Jewish, Orthodox Jewish, he's Jewish. He didn't want to go to STIRP. He was recruited for STIRP. He said, well, this is Catholic stuff. I don't want no part of that. And they had to persuade him. He was a photography expert, medical scientific photography. And he ultimately decided, well, I'll get a free trip to Italy out of the deal. We'll find the paint and we'll come home. Instead, it moved him so much, he essentially pretty much dedicated, this is his life's work, promoting the Shroud. And he has reached and touched more people with this information here than even the Catholic Church ever did, okay? And here's an image of him below at STIRP in 1978. And not only has he propagated this information widely more than anyone else, but actually he saved the Shroud, because when Benford and Marino first made that discovery that the debunk was fraudulent, that the fabric didn't match, nobody would have took them seriously. But he did, and he's a direct pipeline to the other physicists on STIRP, so he was able to put it back in play. So how ironic that a Jew should have been the one to resurrect, pardon the pun, the Shroud. Without him, Benford's observations would have went nowhere. But now, and so that led to a second look at the Shroud, and then that led to the court order to release the data, which puts us where we are today. The Shroud is not only back in play, but the science is even that much stronger.
It's the calling card. It's Jesus Christ's calling card.
That's right. It's solid. And I there's a movement growing now to open it up to another STIRP 78, only with the more sophisticated stuff even of today. So maybe we can get a look at the DNA. I don't think they had that capability in 1978 to get DNA off of an old blood drop. Let's see what's in the DNA. You know, I've heard people speculate. They say it's only the mother's DNA, because there's no earthly father. I mean, we'll see. And then towards the end of my book, I write about the hateful bias against the Shroud. And this is very important to understand, because you understand why it continues to be suppressed. I quote Matthew chapter 10, verse 22. You will be hated by everyone because of me, Jesus said. And isn't that the truth 2,000 years later?
100%.
They hate this Shroud. You look at those three assholes there from the fake carbon dating scan they tried to pull in 1988, standing in front of the columns of the British Museum.
Yeah, like we did it. Like,
all small, all proud, you know? Yeah. And then you have the 1997 fire. There's an image. They're just trying to keep the area cool. There's no way to contain the fire, but they were hoping to keep the area cool while Trematore was banging on it with the sledgehammer. And on the far right there, that's the amazing Randy, James Randy. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
No.
He's dead now, but his claim to fame, he would like debunk these all of these mediums and the supernatural stuff.
Oh, I think I remember somebody like that. I remember hearing him, yeah.
Yeah. But he's very, very anti-cynical. More than that, I mean, he's a proud atheist, and he just manifests like a hatred for, you know, religion and God himself. But he's a proud atheist, and he once wrote, "I was in Italy when the fabulous Shroud of Turin was again being displayed for the eagerly gullible. This huge rag, so thoroughly and authoritatively discredited by the experts, was guarded by garishly costumed volunteers who glowered at me because I resembled the rabbi." That's the amazing Randy. But you could just see a weird hatred, a spiritual hatred.
A spiritual detest.
You want to be skeptical, that's fine. But it's deeper than that. This Shroud is hated.
Right.
Yeah.
Detested.
It really is. And finally, there it is. This brings it all home. You've got three images there on the far left. That's what you actually see on the Shroud. If you took an image with an iPhone, very vague, unclear image. Then on the right, you see the negatives that we talked about. And that handsome young man right there, that's AI-generated Jesus based on the image that's on the Shroud. Jeez. So they cleaned them up without
exactly how I would expect him to look. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is crazy.
Looks like Jim Caviezel.
Yeah. Man, it sure does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, man. So could we be looking at Jesus Christ?
Yeah. Now, to wrap this up on a bit of hopeful news, you know, Trump has announced that Mel Gibson, among others, is going to be his new point man. They want to make Hollywood great again. Right?
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on the Joe Rogan show maybe a couple weeks ago. He's got a new movie coming out called The Resurrection. So it's going to pick up from the Passion, Resurrection. But he starts talking about the Shroud right about the time I'm finishing up this book. So my ears perked up, and he starts talking about things like the Roman coins, and the Shroud's been redated to 2,000 years. And now he's Trump's guy doing a movie. I wonder if maybe part of the plan includes this great awakening is we're going to finally have a massive public disclosure of the stuff I'm talking about today. Wouldn't that be something? Well, that's interesting.
Well, I'm going to tell you this right now. I talk to Jim every day. Jim Caviezel, I talk to him every day.
Oh, do you really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've known about this, but I can't speak on it.
Yeah.
On the movie. So, but yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's good.
Yeah.
It's a good sign.
You're talking to the right guy, Mike.
It's a good sign that you can't speak on it.
Yeah.
That's how I take it. I won't ask no more questions.
Yeah. That's incredible. So, and Jim Caviezel, his initials JC, he was 33 years old when he played the role. He was struck by lightning. Lightning. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, yeah. I know about all of that weird stuff that was going on. I mean, you talk about comms, right? So it's very exciting. And, I feel Barry Schwartz passed the torch on to me. And I want to touch as many people as I can. And there it is, the Divine Selfie.
Wow.
At Amazon under Mike King or Mike S. King. And it's a really powerful 1 hour read. I mean, I was moved in putting it together. Okay.
I wonder how exact that photo really is, man.
I don't know. AI is pretty badass if they do it right.
Yeah. I just, man.
But, people say, oh, the image on the Shroud looks like an old man. Look what he went through.
You look old too. Yeah, anybody would.
And some of those whip marks hit him in the face. The stress, the brutality. You age 30 years just taking a beating and a crucifixion like that.
Golly, man.
So I imagine the AI is programmed in such a way to take that into account and give us a more knowledge. So
thank you so much for this treat, man. Where do people get the book?
Amazon.com, The Divine Selfie. It's available in all countries. And you can get it. My author page is Mike King or Mike S. King, or just put in The Divine Selfie. It's got a Kindle version there too.
This
and then at realnewsandhistory.com if people want a PDF version.
Okay.
The PDF page. So
realnewsandhistory.com, folks. Go down there.
I prefer if people get it on Amazon because we want to jack this up the ratings. So more people stumble across it. And it's amazing, you know, how many Christians and Catholics don't know this stuff. I went to Catholic school just like you. How do you not teach this? Now, if they want to take their hands off and say, we're not going to take an official position, that's fine. But tell me about the forensics. So that leads me to believe there's something going on in the Catholic Church himself.
100%.
I agree with you. Yeah. We know that. Yeah. They should be leading with this.
That's not shocking at all. Gee, that's not shocking.
This should be their bread and butter punch right here.
100%. Man, what a beautiful, beautiful presentation you put forth. I thank you, Mike.
My pleasure.
Folks, man, come on. It's there. It's there. It's there for you to, for everyone to see. Thank you, Mike. And yeah, definitely.
Amen,
Jesus
brother.
Christ, thank you. Gosh, beautiful. Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Thank you so much, Mike. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.